Today is January 4th, 2017. It's what?
Sixth.
The sixth day of Teves? Okay, we'll take your word for it. And came across a piece that takes into perspective, even though we're finishing up in theory today, Parak Tazayin 16. It really is the highlight of 16, of course, is the issue with the man, the test of the man, the people complaining about not having food. And we see these Jews seem to complain several times over the course of these books, over the course of these couple chapters. So we had number one, after they left Egypt while they're by the Yamsuf, so they turn to Moshe and say, and the Egyptians are coming, I believe in Kvarim and Mitzrayim, and there aren't enough graves in Egypt. Then they move along a little, after that they get to Mara, and they complain that they don't have any water, the water is only bitter, and Moshe makes the water sweet. Then we go up to our chapter, where the people complain that we don't have any bread, we don't have anything to eat, they ran out of food, and now they get man. And they complain to Moshe, and they get man. And then in the next part, Parak, where, spoiler alert, but they run out of water, meaning that water in Mara stayed in Mara, didn't move along with them. So they have that complaining, and then they have the Amalekites coming, and there's a complaint there. And Hashem doesn't seem to respond to any of these complaints. He responds to all of them, but he doesn't seem to be upset, doesn't seem to be bothered by any of these complaints. So did the Jews do the right thing? Did they do the wrong thing? What is their status at this time? Is that do we appreciate the complaints? Not appreciate the complaints? That is the question. So I did find a piece that put all those five issues together. Rabbi Menachem Liptag, if anybody has ever seen the website Tanakh.org. If anybody in this room ever needs to give an hour-long shiur on something having to do with Chumash, that is the site to go to. Really brilliant, one essay after another, brilliant stuff. I'm not sure we've covered a piece on him with him over the course of this over Shmos yet. Trying to remember if we did or not. But one thing that he highlights often is in the beginning of Shmos is the Haftorah of Parshas Kedoshim, which we never actually ever read, or read once every like 9 years or so. That is found on page 1175. It comes from the book of Yecheskel. And what is going on here? By he devar Hashem ilai lemor ben adam deber le Yisrael v'mar tehem kol mar Hashem elokim hal lidrosh usi atem ba'im chayni im rosh lachem um Hashem elokim. So ben adam, thus Hashem said, is it to seek to me that you come? As I live, I will not make myself accessible to you. These are the words of Hashem. So would you rebuke them? And we say, kol mar Hashem b'yom bachari Yisrael. Hashem says, the day I chose Israel, we're in verse 5, when I swore, right, v'esaya di lezer beis Yaakov, v'vadal lehem I chose them and I swore to the seed of Yaakov that I'm there for you, that I am Hashem. And that day, on that day, what's that day, by the way? That day is probably referring to the Bris Ben Habasarim, the pact that he made with Avram. On that day I swore that I was going to take them out of Egypt, to the land of Israel, which is a land flowing milk and honey, and it's got splendor of all the lands, etc. And I said to them, every man cast away the detestable idols of his eyes, and do not defile yourself with the idols of Egypt, because I'm Hashem. Right? So Hashem says, I'm going to take them out of Egypt. Don't get in trouble in Egypt. Don't succumb to the chatayim. Don't succumb to the avodah zarah in Egypt. And Rabbi Liptag has a different piece where he discusses that this is really a reference to the Gilui Arayos, really a reference to immoral behavior. Don't act immorally while you're in Egypt. So what happened? Did Bnei Yisrael do that? So pasuk ches, vayomru vi v'lo avu lishro elai. But they rebelled against me. They didn't listen to me. Ish es shekutzei neim v'lo hishlichu. They didn't forsake the idols of Egypt. V'es gulule mitzrayim lo azavu. And they they didn't detest the idols of their eyes, and nor the idols of Egypt. What are the idols of one's eyes? If they're not the idols of Egypt, what's it referring to? It's referring to the immorality, right? So, v'yomer lishvocha masi aleihem l'chalosi api behem v'soch eretz Mitzrayim. So I intended to pour my fury upon them in Egypt. Now, I was going to punish them in Egypt. But what happened? But I acted for the sake of my name so that I won't be desecrated amongst the non-Jews. And I took them out of Edom, so that I'll be known to them. And brought them out into the Midbar. Right, so what is this? This is a pretty powerful piece, which we generally, when we have the pre-Pesach plays in preschool, this is not generally part of it. This is not really the description that we have. The description that we have is that we had a Heliga, holy tzaddikim in Israel, and the Nebuch, they were being enslaved by those evil Egyptians through no reason of their own, and Hashem took them out. But that we do know the concept that they're at the 49th level of Tumah. We do know that things were not going well for them. Had they not been taken out that time, they would have been lost. This is even saying even beyond that. They didn't deserve to be taken out during that time. And yet, despite that, Hashem took them out. Why? Not necessarily on behalf of the Jews, but because Hashem had made a promise to Avram, and he keeps his word. And what can do? He had to take Bnei Yisrael out. There is the Sforno in his introduction to Sefer Shmos. So it's not in the Mikra's Gedolos Shmos, at least not this edition. You have to go back to Bereishis and find his introduction to Sefer Shmos. But we've tracked it down. And the Sforno's introduction to Sefer Shmos says, V'siper b'sifro ha-sheini kimi'az hichel zera Yisrael l'chalek bris avosim b'mitzrayim, that the seeds of Yisrael had gone against the bris that they had made with Hashem, meaning Avram had his end of the bargain too, and Bnei Yisrael wasn't carrying it out. Kasher heid Yecheskel, as Yecheskel testifies to, right? It quotes our pasuk, and that is why Yule Avadim Befarach, and that's why they were slaves, and that's why they had such difficult time in Egypt, not just because the Egyptians were extremely mean to them, but because Bnei Yisrael, it seems to be saying, deserves it. He deserves it. That I wouldn't say it. Sforno said it. It seems like that was the indicator. The Haftorah that we just read doesn't say that. Doesn't say that they got an extra punishment. That's an interpretation that the Sforno gives. But that is out there. So for Bnei Yisrael to transfer to remake themselves in the image of a people, that two things have to happen, right? They leave Egypt. What are the two important goals that Bnei Yisrael has?
Receive the Torah.
Receive the Torah is number one. What?
Do tshuva.
Well, the tshuva is a way of getting to the goal. What's the goal? They're supposed to get the Torah and then go where?
Israel.
Israel, yes. So in order to establish the kingdom in Eretz Yisrael, so they had to change from this group of people that perhaps didn't even deserve to leave Egypt to actually being the people, A, deserving at the level that they're able to receive the Torah, and B, at the level of people that are able to go and establish a kingdom, a Mamlechas Kohanim B'Gai Kadosh, in Eretz Yisrael. So how are they going to get from one place to another? How are they going to get from the sinning slaves to the righteous people that are all able to receive nevuah, are all able to receive prophecy at Har Sinai? Vos?
I have to take Rabbi Weinberg's class.
They could take Rabbi Weinberg's class. Unfortunately, he wasn't going to be born for another 3,500 years. So they had to do the next best thing to Rabbi Weinberg's class. And
listen
to Moshe. Follow along the tracks that Hashem was laying out for them as they left Egypt. And to get and what takes place over the course of Bishalach. So we're normally used to thinking about Bishalach and about the Shira, and there's the Mun in there, and these are all, there's kind of all disparate items. They have the issue of crossing the Yamsuf, the Mun, the water, the Amalek. All these different things happen to them before we get to Parshas Yisro. So he says, no, these are all a story. These are all steps that you have to take to get from one point to the next. So the first thing that they had to take care of is breaking their slave mentalities. I think we've referred to it in the past. Rav Salvechik has one of his essays in the book. It appears in several of his works. One of his famous pieces appears in his book on Pesach and Haggadah, as well as there is a book that came out even while he was alive called Collected Essays. I think the Rav Spee, I forgot the word is. So it even appeared all the way then. It goes back a while. The idea of what slave is entitled Slavery and Freedom, what they had to break. And he points out that a slave is not able to do a couple of different things. A slave is exempt from time-bound commandments. B, a slave is pasulaidus, he's not allowed to give testimony. And three, a slave does not get married. What?
You can't own anything either.
Right, but that's a technicality of slavery. I mean, he just doesn't exist as an individual entity. But in terms of his persona relationship to Hashem, so those three things exist. No time-bound commandments. Number two, no testimony. And number three, no marriage. And the explanation is because he's not himself. He doesn't, he's not, the explanation is, right, which is also means that he doesn't able to be able to get us up. He is bound to somebody else. He has a master that's not Hashem. What?
I thought his master could get
her. Yeah, but it's not a marriage in our terminology. Doesn't get, I don't believe he gives her a get when he leaves her. It's not considered a wedding. We don't have a smorgasbord beforehand. There's no. There's only a two-part, or, you know, there's only a keyboard guy, not a five-piece band. It's not the same thing. So somehow they had to break that mentality. And how do they break that mentality? So if one looks at the text, you didn't notice this when we went through Perek Yudalet, but there's a couple of very interesting lines that Hashem says to them that they have to leave in Perek Yudalet, verse chapter 14, verse 10 or so. So what happens that someone help the brother out.
I'm coming.
Help the brother.
Whoever strikes again.
Oh my God.
So, life's never been easy.
Okay.
I'm glad to see you have such good taste.
Okay. So as we're in Perek Yudalet in chapter 14. So the Egyptians are coming to them, and and Bnei Yisrael look up, and Mitzrayim is marching after them, and they're very afraid. And they all complain to Hashem. What do they complain to Hashem? They say to Moshe, "Do we not have enough kvarim? Do we not have enough graves in Egypt that we have to be brought out here in order to die here?" Halo ze hadavar shedibarti lech Mitzrayim lemor chadami menu ve'adam Mitzrayim. Then we say. That you should just leave us alone. Because it's better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert. Moshe says to them, "Don't be afraid. Stay still, and you're going to see the saving from Hashem, which He's going to do." And as you see the Egyptians today, this is verse 13. Lo sosifu lirosam od adulam. You're never going to see them again. So how do we understand that? So it sounds like Moshe is just promising the people, "Don't worry, everything's going to be okay. You're never going to have to worry about these Egyptians again." So, the Ramban, there's two interesting statements that the Ramban makes along these lines. Actually, one is the Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra says, "He says, Uru es shuas Hashem, you're going to see the saving of Hashem." So the Ibn Ezra points out, "Ki atem lo sasu milchama," because you're not going to war. You're only going to see the Yeshua of Hashem. And even as it continues, "V'lama lo yilachu al nashem v'al b'nehem," why weren't you ready to fight? Right, it's wild. They have 600,000 people, and that's plenty more than the amount of Egyptians that are chasing after them. And the answer is Ki Mitzrayim hayu adonim liYisrael, because the Egyptians were masters over the Jews. V'zeh hador hayotzi Mitzrayim laman minorav lispol ol Mitzrayim v'nafsho shefela. And this is the generation that grew up, that left Egypt. They grew up thinking that they are subservient to their masters. V'yochal yochal atali lachim adonim. How could they fight against their masters? How Yisrael nirfim ve'enam melomdim. The Bnei Yisrael was weak, and they are not learned in war. So therefore they have to stand to the side and they have to see that that's Ibn Ezra. And they have to see that Hashem is helping them. And the Ramban actually has a very interesting insight on the end of the Pasuk, where he says, you're going to see, says the Ramban, Al das raposeinu hi mitzvahs lo sa'aseh ledoros. This is a mitzvah. How do you understand the end of the Pasuk? Lo sosifu lirosam od ad olam. You're not going to see them ever again. So the way I read it originally was, it's a prophecy. That everything's going to be okay, and you're never going to have to worry about these Egyptians again. Comes the Ramban and says, no, it's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah. You shall never worry about them again. You shall never see them again. You shall never bow down to them again. It is a mitzvah to separate yourselves from them. Rabbi Liebtag, in fact, points out that if you look at the... That doesn't sound very much like pshat. Pshat sounds like the way we learned it before. A simple explanation is, no, it's just a prophecy. But if one looks at the very end of the Tochacha... So for that, we're looking at the very end of Parshas Kisavo. Page 1084, chapter in Devarim, chapter 28, verse 67. So the verse says, "Baboker tomar mi ten erev." In the morning, you'll say, "Who can give us that last night?" Uv erev tomar mi ten boker. And in the morning, and the night, you say, "Who could give us the morning?" You always wish the old days were better. Mi pachad levavcha asher tivchad. Plus, you're going to be so afraid. Mi marei necha asher tireh. And the sight of your eyes, and from the sight of the eyes, which you're going to see. Viv shivcha Hashem Mitzrayim. Hashem will return you to Egypt by anios and ships. Biderach shamarti lacha lususi. In the way that I said to you, you shall never see them again. So what is that? Hashem is saying, if you violate all these things, you will eventually be sold down there into slavery, which is in a way a violation of that command that I gave you. You will be forced to violate that command of worship, of being subsumed in slavery. Once again. Okay, so that's what Hashem, that's what we're up against. We're up against the B'nai Israel, that even though they, what are you looking at me like that? That even though they have 1,000 to, they outnumber the Egyptians 1,000 to 1 in terms of their men, they're not willing to fight, but they're unable to fight because their masters are there. So Hashem says, don't worry, you're going to stand aside and you're going to see that I'm going to defeat the Egyptians. And of course we see that's what happens at the end. At the end, the Egyptians are destroyed and Bnei Israel is then ready to move on to the next step. And they trust that Hashem will take care, Hashem will protect them from the Egyptians, which Hashem just took care of.
Is that the same thing, you're not allowed to go to Egypt? Is that where you
Yeah, so there is that idea out there.
Exactly.
That's a different pasuk. There's a pasuk about that.
Those Egyptians are not the Egyptians of this period.
Right, so that's interesting. Maybe we should have done that for one of the halacha days. There's an idea of not marrying the Egyptians.
Right.
So that we say, oh, everything's mixed around and we can't figure out. But there is also the idea of not going, living in Egypt.
In the land itself.
Yeah. In the land itself, yeah. Now, plenty of Jews did live in Egypt over the years, like the Rambam. Sadia Gaon, the Rabbaz, Rav Yosef Karo.
Right.
No, he didn't actually, well, He was only there for a little bit. Rav Adi Yosef grew up in Egypt.
The Rizal grew up there too.
What?
The Rizal grew up
in Egypt.
He was born
right.
In Jerusalem and his white in his mother.
Right. So it needs to be understood. There's plenty of and there's plenty of Jewish garbage in Egypt also. The Cairo Geniza to testify to the amount of Jews that were there over the years. So maybe we'll cover that at a different point. Okay, so that's number one. Number one was Kriyas Yamsuf. Number two was Mara. What happened at Mara? So, of course, Mara is they don't have any water. They complain, and are they justified in their complaint? So it sounds like they are. It sounds like they're justified in their complaint. Hashem doesn't seem to rebuke them for their complaint. But it is interesting, at the very end of that little section there, if we go to Perek Tesvav, Pasuk Chafvav, what does it say? Vayomer. After he sweetened the water, Shamsin lo chuk mishpat b'sham nisa'u, Vayomer im shamot, right, you're going to get chuk mishpat. What was chuk mishpat? So we learned about that. That's referring to the mitzvos that they got at Mara, right, which Rashi said was paraduma and right, he gave them a few mitzvos. Shabbos paraduma and dinim, and we said paraduma maybe is referring to kibud av. This really was like a misprint at some point, but a couple of mitzvos they got there. And what were they told by Yomer? And Hashem says, "Im shemot yishmal kol Hashem elokecha ve'yashar b'nav taseh." If you listen to Hashem and you do the right thing, so I'll take care of you, right? Kol machla shesan yisraim lo asim alecha ki ani Hashem rofecha. Any problems that you had in Egypt, I won't place upon you because of I am Hashem who's healing you. Hashem is saying, do mitzvos and everything will be okay. What is that a preparation for? You're getting some mitzvos now, and you're going to get some mitzvos in the future. He points out as well that this is a flip of the terminology that they had in Parshas Ve'eru. It says below yishma, it says the Jews did not listen. The word terminology of Israel, they didn't listen. So Hashem says, if you listen, so you're not going to have to worry about the slavery in Egypt, and you're going to continue to get water. Now they get a, he points out here the very last pasuk of Parak Tezvav. It says Vayavo Elima, they came to Elim. What happened in Elima? It seems like nothing. Nothing happened in Elim. In fact, there's plenty of water and plenty of food. What was there? Visham Shtemesrei Enos Mayim. 12 springs of water and shivim tamarim and 70 date trees. Now, it doesn't necessarily sound like that's going to feed 2 million people, but the assumption is that the Jews were taken care of there in terms of their food and drink. Do those numbers mean anything to you?
What?
12 tribes? Yeah, 12 tribes and 70 nations, meaning that everything is this is the way things are supposed to be. So he says, all right, so he gave him a little bit of a break from their test. But immediately they get moved on. They leave Elim, and they come to Midbar Sin, Ben Elim Ben Sinai, and they don't go all the way to Sinai, and they get Mun. And this becomes the test of Mun, that they don't have any food. Now, they don't necessarily now. What? How do they ask him there? So in Pasuk Beis it says, "Vayilonu kol das bnei Yisrael Moshe ve'Aaron le'mor." Pasuk Gimel verse 3. "Vayomer le'em bnei Yisrael, mi tein musin b'yad Hashem eretz Yisrael." You're going to die. You're going to die. Is it better? So mi tein musenu b'yad Hashem eretz Yisrael b'shivtenu al sira basar. Right? We should have died in Egypt, where we would have been able to have meat. Ka'achlin lechem lasova ki otzisim osanu al midbar zel amisas kala zebarav. And we're going to die out here, birav. Out of famine. So you get into an interesting perspective, interesting idea here, where at what point is Bnei Yisrael, who's at fault? Right. In the way Rabbi Leibtag is spelling it out is, well, the Jews have to develop in terms of their emunah. But they continue to, at what point are they supposed to have the emunah and not complain anymore? So he suggests that there is an interesting pasuk. I've been bothered by this pasuk for a while, ever since I taught it several years ago. And that is, if you go to Devarim, Perek Ches Pasuk Gimel, 8:3, so on page 982. So Parshas Ekev is continuing the review and the rebuke of Bnei Yisrael through the time in the desert. And Hashem says, Vayan Chav Yarivecha, V'achilcha esaman asher lo yadata. So Hashem says, He afflicted you and let you hunger. V'achilcha esaman asher lo yadata v'yidun avosecha, which you didn't know, your fathers didn't know, l'man hudiacha, ki lo alechem levado yichi adam, in order so that you shall know that it's not on bread alone that a person lives, ki amotza pi Hashem yichi adam, that it's on what Hashem gives you that you live. So v'ya'ancha v'yarivecha. In order to teach you. Now that idea of vayan cha as a test, so that term vayan cha is used as well by Avram. Avram as well is tested, and not only was Avram passing the test, the idea is that he grows from the test. So you have that duality. On one hand it's a test, on the other hand it's a challenge that you have to pass in order to get even better. So that's what the Mun is about, that it's about a test that Bnei Yisrael got in order to get any better and to develop further trust. In fact, that is what indicated by the idea that the Mun had to come every day, and is pointed out by a prominent Gemara in Maseches Yuma. Maseches Yuma discusses some of the issues having to do with Mun, and it comments there that Hashem wanted it to be every day, but if it wasn't for this fact, then they would make the mistake and think that they could trust themselves and they would stop davening. And the Gemara in Yuma says, Shal Tamidah Shem Shimon Bar Yochai, the Tamidim asked Shimon Bar Yochai, Mifnei Malu Yared Lehem Yisrael Mun Pam Achas B'Shana. Why did Hashem just dump Mun once part during the year and they'll store it and you don't have to worry about collecting the mun every day. So Amar Leis, to which Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai responded, Em Shalachem Mashal Ma Davar Daime, I'll make a parable to what this is compared. The Melech Basar V'Dam Sheishlo Ben Echad. Let's say a human king that has one child. Pasuk Lo Mizonos Av Hamachas B'Shanah. He gives him food once a year. V'Leyem Mekabel Penei Aviv El Hamachas B'Shanah. So how many times does he see his dad? Once, right? He doesn't recognize the rest of the year that he's only living because of the kindness that his father showed him. So therefore the king said that he's going to get his food every day. Therefore he's going to have to see me every day. So to a Jew, a guy who has four or five kids, he's going to be nervous that man might not fall tomorrow. And they're all dying. From starvation. So therefore they all have to dive into Hashem. I looked at this Gemara inside, the Marsha comments that why are you only concerned about the guy who has four or five kids? What about the guy who has no kids? Why isn't he nervous about himself? So the Marsha says, oh, because there are probably these guys on the side that were selling some food. So if you were by yourself, you could get enough food. If you had four or five kids, you wouldn't be able to get enough. Really? What, there's the makolet in the middle of the Sinai? What are we talking about? I don't know, but that's what he says. Actually, the Gemara there gives a couple other answers as well. He says, but Hashem gave all of their food at once, so how would they be able to carry it?
Right.
Wouldn't have been so, yeah. And it gives one other answer, which I'm forgetting right now.
So what's the test of the month?
So what is the test of the month? So it's to translate it as a test. It's a bit of a problem because, right, what is the test? It's coming. So the test might be, oh, we have to daven for it to come tomorrow, but of course we're going to daven for it to come tomorrow. It seems like the test is rather, that's what, as he, from Avraham Avinu, the idea of test is that a person gets stronger from it. Right, not so much the test to see if you will pass, but rather to get you to the higher level once you pass. So now B'nai Yisrael is at the level that they see every single day. We have to ask Hashem in order to give us, in order to help us out.
Israel testing
God. Yes, that's, I don't think so.
Rabbi.
That's the way he translates it.
And that's the stone of Chumash in the
Rabbi.
As it says in the bottom part here.
On the side, sometimes on the side they do a little summary of
paragraph. You're in Devarim or in Bishal?
381. Page 381.
Oh.
Israel tests God.
Israel tests God. Interesting. Well, that's in Mara.
Yeah.
That's not here. But yeah, okay. Yeah.
Is there, is there any commentary that you like that seems to ask why Moshe the rock and now Menorah, and then, of course, later when he doesn't go to Israel for it?
Well, there's plenty of commentaries on that.
Yeah, okay.
We're not up to it yet.
Anything. Will that give us any insight what happened now? Going back and see.
You'll have to see. We're going to take a quick gander into chapter Yud Zayin. I know we're a little out of order. Spoiler alert. But there's two more tests over the course of Parshas Bishalach that need to be pointed out. That sounds like a good pre-leaning question that we should ask when we got to Bishalach. Is B'nai Yisrael testing Hashem or is Hashem testing B'nai Yisrael? And you'll know the answer.
It's the relationship.
And Bruce will say both!
Oh.
Both! Okay. So I just ask you now to please control yourself. All right. So when we get to Perek Yud Zayin in Bishalach, so the bottom of page 388, moving on to 390. Actually, yeah. So what happens again? So now they get to the Midbar Sin, Lamaseh, Malpi Hashem, Ve'achnu Berfidim, Ve'in Maim Lishdosam. There's nothing for them to drink. Pasuk Beis, Vayarva Ami Moshe, the people argue with Moshe, and they say, give us wine to drink. Vayomer, and Moshe says to them, Mati Ruvi Numadi, Mati Nasu Es Hashem. So Moshe says, why do you bother me? Why do you test Hashem? I mean, you should know already that things are now okay. Now, Hashem isn't upset with them. Moshe is upset with them. Moshe kind of expects that they should just expect water, I guess. but what happens? So the people wanted water, and they complain, and they say again, "Why do you take us out of Egypt to have us die here?" So Moshe calls out to Hashem, what do I do with this nation? I mean, Moshe is already there. Moshe is saying, you know, they should, it's not my fault. What I do with them? I have a Muna, they don't necessarily have a Muna. I assume Moshe was probably thirsty also. So Hashem says to Moshe, what do you say? That matah, come and take a walk. Right? Take with you the Zikna Yisrael and come and take a walk. And there is a rock that is in Choriv. Now, is Bnei Yisrael in Choriv? No, where are they? We just said it's on top of the page. They're in Refidim. So Hashem says to Moshe, take the Zakenim and your staff, and you're going to find this rock at Choriv. What's at Choriv?
Choriv? You mean the river?
Is that... No, Choriv is a place with a capital C. It's a capital Ches on the few.
Where are we talking?
Pasuk Hey, 5. Pasuk 6. I'm sorry, in 6. Hini omei lefenach Hashem al tzur b'chori v'kisa b'tzur. You'll hit the rock, but soon the wine will come out, and people will be able to drink. What?
Sinai.
Yes, Chori v'Sinai. So Hashem says to Moshe, "You need water. Come here. Go to Har Sinai, and that's where the water is going to be.
Water.
And now the Bnei Yisrael want water. Where are they going to have to go? They're going to have to take a bit of a walk in order to get their water from Choriv. What is the indication? So there is now the transference going on, not just to relying on Hashem, but also on relying on the Torah. What brings you the water? The Torah. Har Sinai. Har Sinai is where the water is going to emanate from. In fact, the end of the Pasuk, running out of time here, so at the end of the Pasuk, the end of the chapter, I mean, is the battle with Amalek. Now, the battle with Amalek, it doesn't seem like the people complained. The people didn't say, Amalek is coming, and we're going to fight with them. Where do they stand? So what's the story? What's the story of that battle? So that's the story where Moshe raises his hands, and his hands are held up. Where was he standing? Where was he standing? So it says on top of the hill, Alu Rosh Hagiva. How many hills are there around there? So you suggest that maybe that hill is referring to Har Sinai. So once again, so where are they looking up to? Not just looking up to Moshe's hand, not just looking up to the sky to Hashem, just looking towards Har Sinai. If they see Har Sinai, they see Moshe's hands, they see HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem has protected them already when they crossed the Yam Suf. He's defeated the Egyptians, he brought them money, he brought them water once, he's brought them water again, and now we've developed a people that have enough emunah in Hashem to perhaps achieve their next two goals. Number one, get the Torah, and number two, in order to carry that forward and bring that and establish a nation in the land of Israel. So that
they're
is
not
it.
Afraid to fight. Now,
and they, right, you also see now they're not afraid to fight.
Yeah, they've extended that slave mentality.
Correct. Oh, to an extent, yeah.
I mean,